One of the interesting parts of the IMF report was actually its discussion about wages. Globally, every developed country has hit the same problem of wages aren't growing. And this is throwing out the boffins at the IMF because unemployment is exceptionally low in many countries. Wages should be going up, and they're not. And this is the thing that's perplexing not just the IMF, but the World Bank, the central banks of the world, and our very own Australian Treasury about what the hell's going on.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Australian Politics Live, the podcast. I'm Catherine Murphy, political editor of Guardian Australia, and I'm also the host of this show. This week, we're thinking about the economy. Are there green shoots starting to appear? Have we turned a corner, or haven't we? And if we have turned a corner, as some people are fond of saying, why are all our shopping centres empty? Why aren't we spending? And also the GST. We're going to have a think about what's going on there. Why are we even talking about the GST? And what is the big problem that the Treasurer, Scott Morrison, is going to have to solve, most important of all? Joining me in the pod zone are Greg Jericho, Guardian Australia's resident charts and numbers man, and also Shane Wright, a bit of a fixture on this podcast for our sessions on the couch about the economy. He's a numbers man of the Wild Wild West. It'll be fun, I promise. There's even robots. Listen up. Why don't you start, Greg? Now, last when I looked up, the Treasurer was talking enthusiastically about green shoots or some such, I don't know, growth of some kind of a plant nature associated with the Australian economy. What's he talking about? Is that valid?
Green shoots generally are things you talk about when there actually isn't a heck of a lot of evidence around to point to. But I guess his main issue that he'd be referring to is the pretty strong growth in full-time employment that we've seen this year. 2016 was a dire year for full-time employment. It actually went backwards, which is a rare thing to happen in an entire calendar year. And there's been a good rebound in that. And so that certainly has been something he's likes to focus on. And also the better conditions, or at least perceived better conditions for businesses. Businesses seem quite happy with the state of affairs generally in terms of sort of indicators of things. But overall, if you sort of take the sort of big economy picture and big picture of the households, the green shoots are still perhaps very much in the seedling sort of stage and need a lot of care because
need a bit of dynamic lifter.
Yeah, the most recent sort of a worrying bit of data that has come out was the latest retail trade figures, which saw a fair plunge in household retail spending. In August, it was one of the biggest monthly plunges for 5 or 6 years. And really, I think that's reflecting just how bad wages growth and household income growth has been. And it's really getting to the point where we've been running down savings a bit and reducing the amount we're saving. And it's, I think, getting to a bit of a point where people are not even going to keep doing that, and they're just going to sort of shut the wallets a little bit.
Shut the wallets.
Yeah, they just didn't shut their wallets for August. They shut their wallets in July. So you actually had a back-to-back monthly fall in retail spend just kicking off the new financial year. And that was the first time since about 2010, 2009 that we'd seen two consecutive months. And that's it's worrying because if you read that into, say, last quarter's national accounts, which showed the savings ratio for households is coming down. It's still elevated compared to those halcyon days of about 03, 04 when Australians had a negative household savings ratio. It's coming down and the growth that we see so much is driven by households. The households and household spending accounts for about 50% of what goes on in the national economy. So if households aren't spending, that means everything else has to pick up. And it is those high-priced houses in Sydney and Melbourne, those big mortgages are crimping the ability for people to spend. And I think one of the most interesting parts of the retail spend was the fact that it was the discretionary spend area. people can't afford a high-priced coffee on the main streets of Paddington.
This is a very superficial shopper's comment, but I must say it is quite striking when I go into Canberra retail outlets over the last few months just how empty they are. And if you occasionally sort of go to a restaurant in Canberra often because, you know, some restaurant proprietors sort of know that you're involved in journalism or politics or whatever, they'll strike up a conversation. And people are saying it's like, even in Canberra, which is a, you know, sort of fairly insulated place in some respects, that things are really grim.
Yeah, it was interesting. It's interesting. If you look at, say Perth pre-GFC boom, where incomes were growing rather rapidly, and you had a big spike in prices because inflation across Perth was going up, people were still really lifting their discretionary spend off the back. They could afford to because their wages were going up. Now you come to this point where wages are not going anywhere, house prices are going up. You actually, and these are heavily indebted households to begin with. Yes, they've got an asset if it's a home that's worth mega bucks, but
all
house prices,
tied up
house prices
asset,
go up and down. Yeah. Yes. So you've got those other areas which Malcolm Turnbull keeps banging on about, say electricity. The biggest increase in cost over the last about 5 years is childcare.
Mm.
About 50% increase in the cost of childcare. And it's hard to escape unless you dragoon your parents into looking after the kids while both parents are both at work. So that you can see the pressures that are going on, which has to somewhere feed into spending.
Mm.
It has to, because you just can't keep running up debt just to maintain lifestyle.
Yeah, maintain
eventually
lifestyle.
Eventually it grabs to you. And that's the poison that might come to those seedlings that Greg is trying to tender.
Yes. Internationally, Greg, we've had some new data from the IMF, which has given a slightly rosier picture, really, about global growth, hasn't it?
Slightly. I mean, every 6 months the IMF comes out with its report and... I always like looking at the titles of their overall report because they're fairly they wear their heart on their sleeve.
Happy times, sad times.
A year ago, the title of the report was subdued demand, and then in April there was a hopeful gaining momentum with a question mark.
Gosh,
and
they now, are page turning sort of titles.
And now it's just seeking sustainable growth, and there certainly is no sense of we're heading into a boom period or anything, but there's at least some optimism that we're not going to... We're at least breaking a little bit out of that new normal of
very low growth
since GFC. For Australia, it's pretty much steady as you go, although there always needs to be a little bit of care with these estimates from the IMF, which they talk to Treasury and other groups in Australia to get their predictions. But for example, in April they were estimating that this year Australia's economy would grow by 3.1%, and now they've revised it down to 2.2%. So that's a fairly substantial revision of growth. But looking out over to the next 5 years, they pretty much are thinking we'll stick within between the 2.73% growth, which if that happens will be very good. They are a little bit less optimistic of unemployment coming down than they were 6 months ago. In April they were suggesting that in 2018 our unemployment rate would fall to 5.1. Now they're saying 5.4, and they still have the pie in the sky prediction for 2022 of it getting down to 4.8, but if you know what you're going to even be doing in 2022,
sure.
Good luck. If you know how the entire economy is going to be looking, then even better luck.
I'm going to be out there with a dynamic lifter.
I think one of the interesting parts of the IMF report was actually its discussion about wages globally. Every developed country has hit the same problem of wages aren't growing. And this is throwing out the boffins at the IMF because unemployment is exceptionally low in many countries. You look at, say, in the US, where it's around 4.2, wages should be going up, and they're not. And this is the thing that's perplexing not just the IMF, but the World Bank, the central banks of the world, and our very own Australian Treasury about what the hell's going on. And so people are throwing up different suggestions. And in this case, the IMF says, look, they looked at part-time employment because that has been growing. You're into the gig economy space. Yeah. And they've just said, well, governments may have to completely rethink unemployment benefits and social assistance. Do we have to have a top-up payment to part-time workers? Do we have to throw large amounts of cash in terms of retraining them to give them opportunities? For the IMF, it was pretty contentious to look at it. So they've said, oh, well, it's all about productivity, which the IMF would always say. But then they've said, oh, it might be a bit of that, those robots coming to grab you. There's a little bit of evidence of it, but then we go, oh, hold on, there'll be more robots. So there's that issue. There is the one about, say, union power diminishing across the globe. And ultimately, as my caller to me the other day pointed out, at the end of the day, employers' staff are their customers.
Yeah.
It's the old Henry Ford argument that he paid above a normal level when he was producing the Model T, and he said, because I want my staff to be able to buy the things.
Exactly.
And Henry Ford wasn't a fan of big labour, but he could understand.
Certainly not a fan of unions.
Not to unions, but he could yeah. see how that economic cycle worked for him and his workers.
Yes. This is quite fascinating, isn't it?
It's the culmination of 30 years of policy suggesting that if you want to improve competitiveness, you've got to keep wages growth down, especially in Australia, and the real drive for flexibility in IR. All the sense that if we can keep inflation down, and that means wage inflation down, things will be good. And the problem is, when the GFC hit, that smashed inflation completely around the world, smashed interest rates, went down to nothing. So the old sense of, oh, we can cut interest rates and that'll boost inflation and wages and everything, no, that wasn't working. So you've got this culmination of these policies where thinking that, oh, low wage growth is kind of the key to getting everything good, and realizing, but the culmination of that is no one wants to spend, there is actually some benefit from a nice sort of moderate level of wage growth. You know, no one wants hyperinflation or 7% wages or anything like that, but the sense of 3.5%.
Speak for yourself.
Well, you know.
Greg Jericho arguing for a pay cut.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
You reckon I've ever got a 7% wage rise?
Yes.
But yes, you know, it's the sense of there being 30 years almost of fear of whenever there was any sort of a wage increase of, oh, this is a wages breakout, we've got to clamp down and we've got to do something. And they have clamped down on it so well that
it's become counterproductive.
There's nothing there, yeah.
It's become counterproductive. And the models, the sort of the broad economic thinking, the rationale, the models, they're just not working in the sense of they're not, we're in I hate new paradigm.
Don't go there. But I had somebody else tell me when we saw the Retail for Trade figures, they pointed out, said, well, the last 2 months coincide with the Fair Work Commission's implementation of their cut in penalty rates.
Yeah.
And now the federal courts said, there's nothing wrong with the FWC. You may not like the decision, but it was made according to law. So that sticks. And the whole argument is, right, businesses will be able to sell more. And for the first 2 months, they haven't. Now, I think it's way too early, and whether you can draw that link, I'm sure there is a beret wearer out there who will argue that. But it is interesting that it's occurred at the same time. Just passing it so we can note by.
Yeah. Yes. No. Well. I mean, we could keep going on this for another 10 minutes, but I did promise the listeners that we'd get to the GST. So
that wasn't the promise. That was a threat.
It's not just us that's interested in the GST, but I do think we need to break this down slightly because busy people are not, are going to be sort of back at the level of first principles, I reckon, with the GST debate. So let's start there. So What's going on with the GST?
What's going on? So the Commonwealth Grants Commission, who's been around since the 30s, their job is to give a share of the GST pool to every state and territory. Now, they have one of the most complex, opaque systems in the developed world to come up with the numbers. And what's gone on over the last, especially the last 5 years, is that WA's share fell to 30 cents in the dollar. So for every dollar of GST raised within the borders of WA, or maybe the soon-to-be New Republic of Western Australia, depending on where you stand,
West Australia.
They would get, WA was getting 30 cents. And this was at a time, and this occurred as the state had a domestic recession. And some argue it still is in domestic recession. And if you look at every indicator over there, it hasn't been pleasant. So while that's been going on, states that have been doing rather well, like Tasmania, for instance, have actually been getting well over their equity share. Mm-hmm. And so very, very angry West Australians about this system.
It's because the distribution lags, right? That's the problem?
Part of it is the Barnett government's inability to not spend money.
Yes.
Part of it is that the way that the system works, and this is the best example, mining royalties are caught up in the formula used by the Commonwealth Grants Commission. But the port fees charged by a state government to a mining company to export their mining, their resources, isn't. So technically, Western Australia would be far better off getting rid of every royalty it has and imposing huge port fees.
Port charges.
And they would escape the redistribution element of mining royalties that are part and parcel of it. There are other issues. Almost all of the iron ore in this country comes out of one state. And so under the way horizontal fiscal equalisation works, that is supposed to be shared a bit out because somebody in the 1870s decided, oh, this is a good spot for a state boundary. Interesting fact that the Pilbara, there was a theory that it should be its own state. And that WA should be three states.
Pilbara Australia.
And that the southernmost part of Western Australia would actually be called Victoria. But I'm into a bit of history here.
Whoa.
There are maps. Yeah.
That went in a completely unexpected direction.
That did, I know. But which gets us to this point. The Liberal government, Turnbull government, knows they're on a hiding to nothing over in WA. If you believe the polls, they could lose 4 to 5 seats in WA. Mm-hmm. So they've promised, right, we're going to try and find a way.
Sort this out.
So they gave it to the Productivity Commission. The Productivity Commission, which was asked, is the current system hurting the national economy? And the PC says, we can't find the evidence. We know it must be there. it is really intriguing how they've got around this because one of the arguments is, what's it done to interstate migration? Migration is working as it's supposed to. Mm. People move to the strongest states.
Yeah.
And at the moment, that's Tasmania, Victoria, New South Wales. Where are West Australians going to? Tasmania, Victoria, New South Wales. It's the GST allocation system is not affecting what's a greater macroeconomic factor.
Yep.
Anyway, we get to the PC. PC says, we can't see anything, but we reckon the system's a bit broke. Because it's really not fair where WA's ended up. So we've come up with another way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process, they've come up with a proposal that really generates some extra cash for WA and really takes away cash from every other state and territory.
That looks
perfect political storm.
Losers. Everyone else is losers. That always works well in a political context, doesn't it?
It does.
One state is a winner and everyone else is a loser.
Yeah. So how's that going to play out, Greg?
Not well.
Spoiler alert. Not well.
I mean, the two proposals that the Productivity Commission is kind of suggesting that should be done is instead, because at the moment the system is designed to try and equalise every state to the best performing state, which at the moment is WA. And they make a good case in that works well, except when you have really exceptional situation as we have now with WA just...
The biggest mining boom since the 1850s.
Yeah, the system wasn't designed to equalise us up to that level. And So they suggest, well, we could either equalise it to kind of the average or to the second best performing state. Problem is, if they were to, if this year they were to equalise it to the average, Queensland would lose $1.5 billion. South Australia would lose $500 million. You know, that's a fairly big whack of money for two states who are having upcoming state elections and are where both governments and even the opposition parties are under pressure from minor parties like One Nation and the Nick Xenophon Party, whose bread and butter is pretty much sort of our state is getting
states
picked
rights.
On by... Yeah, well, you know, it's like, real states' rights type stuff.
Yeah.
So... if you went to the second, if they equalised it to the second strongest state, Queensland, not so worse off, but still loses $700 million. South Australia, $250 million. New South Wales suddenly becomes the big loser. They lose $1.1 billion. Now, New South Wales is a state where governments like to win a lot of seats because there are a lot of seats. So that's not going to be something that's, you know, Scott Morrison is going to have fun, you know, announcing. It's the Productivity Commission is a nice report that takes that very, as the Productivity Commission is meant to be, fairly sort of neutral about things. It's got no skin in the game in a sense, but it really it's not something that a politician would write or anyone who was trying to write seats would write, really.
It is interesting because the figures that everyone's quoting, is the starting point is that WA's share stays at currently it's 34 cents, but we do know that over the next 2 years, WA's share will go up, and that means everybody else's share will come down.
Yeah.
So, yes, WA under this gets an extra, and it's a lot of money, $3.6 billion. This is for a state that's running a $2 billion budget deficit. So there goes your deficit. They are about to axe, I think it's about 3,000 public servants. We've got some money. They've they're cutting wages effectively for people in the public service in WA. Huge windfall. But that windfall, actually, once you get into a position where you implement this, the figures will be very, very different. Now, the question is whether Scott Morrison and Malcolm Turnbull have the political ability to argue that, look, these figures, yes, but in 2 years' time or 3 years' time, the quantums will be much different. They'll be much smaller for every state and territory. WA's share will not be 3.2. It may be down to 1.2. The hit to Queensland may be a couple of hundred million dollars. That's how you could argue it,
but
it's whether you have the ability to argue that case is another story. Mm. And the Herald Sun proved to you yesterday with its front page saying, "Victorian Liberal MPs, will you stand up for Victorians and for Victorian share of GST?" It's already started, and and the Victorian Libs are pretty quick to say, "Yeah, I'll be fighting for Victoria."
Well, of course,
and
this is a complete shocker.
Well, and also
not from a West Australian point of view.
Even the Productivity Commission, I think the report itself has enough ammunition in there for people to argue that there doesn't need to be a change because of the struggle that they had to find any evidence, and they used the rather wonderful phrase that. An absence of evidence is not evidence of an absence. You know, it's kind of this real sort of bizarre sort of thing. The fact that we couldn't find any evidence doesn't mean that there isn't any evidence.
What if a tree falls in a forest?
Well, we went more on the black hole. We like physics and Einstein said, right, there should be something there, and yes, you can find the evidence. But the PC has said, right, we'll ditch quantum physics and we'll say it. It's the vibe, mate. It's got to be there. It's like the PC does some great work, but that line...
It's deeply weird.
It was deeply disturbing. And it goes to the argument that having been a poor sucker who read every one of the submissions, the argument that the current process is hurting the national economy was always... and hurting national productivity was always going to be exceptionally difficult to prove. And the PC actually goes through some of the modelling that has been done over whether the current system, is it hurting the national economy? And they concede, well, it depends on the assumptions you feed in, because every person who's done modelling in that space has come up with a different answer. Mm. It's not settled science.
No.
And they
also, as opposed to black holes.
And they also used it to try and sort of get their little hobby horses, for especially the congestion tax, which the productivity.
Okay.
They had the suggestion that states might be putting off bringing a congestion tax because they're worried about losing GST. And I think they're worried about losing votes more than GST, possibly losing GST revenue.
And the PC said they talked to bureaucrats within the state treasuries, and they've gone, oh well, yeah, you know, it's all because of GST. Oh, but. Bollocks. Yeah. So much of it is driven around politics. And the argument that, say, states are not developing coal seam gas, for instance, because of what it might do to GST, I go to the point, South Australia is earning $60 million in royalties from its gas and petroleum resources. That is just not worth it in the grand scheme of things. Victoria would not earn a great deal if it open slathered the state to coal seam gas. Queensland is only, I think, last year earned $30 million. So it's not. It is
no,
such,
no, no.
It is that's yeah, 30 million compared beer, to say yeah. WA, which will earn $4 billion from iron ore royalties. Billion, it is a different kettle of fish, and yeah, there's plenty of treasury bureaucrats who've not quite worked out that politics drives so much, not the GST share, which, as this report says, it points out that even most people in government don't understand how the system works.
That's a beautiful note to end on. But we will, I promise you, keep you posted about this GST debate, how Scott Morrison can produce something to win WA that doesn't annoy
everybody else,
the entire rest of the Australian population. That's really going to be something to buy popcorn for, I reckon.
Yes. After you've watched Blade Runner 2049 and The Last Jedi, like this, he will need to be the new Luke Skywalker Jedi Master, I reckon, to get around this.
I'd suggest it'll become the next thing that will be announced at the end of a year, rather like the clean energy target. We'll put this off until some time of the day. It's not something you really want.
You're a cynical man, Greg.
Gosh, entirely cynical. We'll stop imposing our cynicism on this lovely audience. Anyway, gentlemen, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mufaru.
Well, thanks so much to Greg and to Shane and to all of you for listening. Now, you can subscribe to the series using your favourite podcast app. Don't forget to leave a rating on iTunes because it really does help the project. Thank you so much to Miles Martignoni, who is now back from leave, our erstwhile producer. And speaking of back, we'll be back next week when Federal Parliament resumes. The spring session, which will take us out between now and the end of the year, threatens to be an absolute blockbuster. Make sure you pack your sensible shoes. Thank you.